Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 126, Finding Dory, Octophile.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, swimming. What do? We swim, swim, swim. Ooh, and you got to. Ooh. Oh, hey, hey, hey. Welcome, welcome, everyone, to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers. My name is Mason. I'm here with Morgan and Chelsea, and you are here on the amazing episode number 126. That's right. We're the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers. We've got Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. And, you know, I kind of like having these, like, twice a year Pixar releases. it's pretty great because then we get to do more Pixar new release episodes. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely one of them. Today we are reviewing Finding Dory. And, we just couldn't wait to talk about it. Morgan and Chelsea saw this a little while back. I saw it on Friday night. And we're going to talk about it now because we don't want to wait another week.
Yes. And basically the rest of the world saw it as well. It broke an animation box office record. It seemed everyone was talking about it. Even people I did not think would be talking about this film. And I was just like, I can't wait. It's already been a week since I've seen it. I don't want to wait another week until our normal record date, so I made the executive decision to bump up the live broadcast. So I'm sure some of you are like, hey, what the heck? Why did I miss it? That is totally on me. You can send all the hate mail to me. But there are still a few people joining us live in the chat. I just couldn't wait, guys. I couldn't wait any longer. Hey, so
you are the executive.
I'm the boss.
We bow to your wishes. And, well, you know, I just couldn't contain the excitement. And this gives us an extra week to edit and release the podcast. And it gives us an extra week to, like, you know, take a breather or something. I don't know. Yeah. So Finding Dory, man. Whew.
Today we are going to be discussing the short that came before it, Piper, as well as the full movie of Finding Dory. So this is just for everybody out there who may be wondering, oh, I wonder if this is going to have spoilers. It's an hour and a half long. It wouldn't have spoilers, would it? Come on, people.
If Finding Dory has not been released in your country yet, and you don't want to be spoiled, which I recommend you don't,
press stop now.
Yeah, I would recommend not being spoiled. This was great to see fresh.
Fresh like a fish.
Fresh fish. We catch them, you buy them.
Catch them, you buy them.
Le paso, le paso.
Today's the day! Our field trip to the Stingray Migration.
Stingray Migration.
Migration is about going home. Which is where you're from.
How do the stingrays all know where to go?
Instinct. Something deep inside you that feels so familiar that you have to listen to it.
My mom, my dad, I have a family.
We will never forget you, Dory.
What if I forget you?
I miss them. You know what that feels like?
Yes.
Then we better get going.
Grab your things, I'm gonna take you home.
Totally sick!
Isn't it great?
No! I'm gonna be totally sick!
Can you help me?
Sorry.
Not a great swimmer.
I think you swim beautifully.
Thank you!
You're welcome.
Wait, Dory?
Yes.
Dory?
Yes.
You and I were friends!
No.
It was so much fun because I'd tell you a story and then you'd completely forget about it, and then I'd get to tell it to you over and over again.
I'm looking for my family.
Are you crazy? It's too dangerous.
Hands!
Hands? Mommy?
Holy Neptune!
That is definitely not Mommy!
I'm sorry. I gotta blink. How do you hold your eyes open that long?
What's happening?
Hello? Hello?
Hey, you.
Hi. Can you help me? Mm-mm. Not good.
Yeah, Finding Dory, man. I'll tell you right now, I liked it. I liked it better than the last Pixar sequel.
Yes, me too.
You know, I am doing a I'm doing what's called the summer industry course at A&M, and we're doing a 20-second short film that is actually set underwater, and it is photorealistic rendering, and so we got a lot of inspiration from Finding Dory.
Nice. Well, speaking of photorealistic, let's talk about Piper first, which is the short that played before Finding Dory. It's about a
Finding Nadori.
Little adorable little bird.
So
little
cute.
Little Piper.
Yeah, it's a baby bird leaving the nest for the first time, and his mother is giving him lessons in finding and eating clams out of the ocean, which, oh my gosh, so freaking cute. And that was one of the very first things when I watched this movie or this short, and I really couldn't tell. It was one of those moments where it's like, was there any live action used in this? I don't even know. I think they bridge the gap between photorealistic and cartoony in such a great way, because the characters were so, you definitely knew that it was a character in a movie, but at the same time, it was just so real. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Yeah, real. It was real, yo.
Oh, it was named Piper because the type of birds are called sandpipers. Right. Yeah. So this was about a baby Piper and his mother and a whole flock of them and different learnings.
I would call him Pippin. I think Pippin would be a great name for him.
Is he going to sing a song?
Yeah. Photorealistic. I'm telling y'all, this is the future of animation. Like, the biggest studios with the best technology are going to stay with, like, obviously we're going to have stylized characters in the future, but this higher fidelity rendering, lighting and shading, is going to, and cinematography is going to be the future. A big part of the future of animation. Like, just look at where the technology went for Monsters University with their ray tracing engine, and How to Train Your Dragon 2 with Torch, their proprietary like rendering software. And I'm excited. I'm learning a little bit about that myself, working with some DreamWorks people this summer. And I'm telling you, like, it's brilliant. It's amazing. It's amazing how it tells the story. It's just how real it is. And it makes what happens on screen all the more magical, because it's, you see, further along in the short that, you know, Piper is very animated. He is very stylized. He has facial expressions and moods and things like that. And yet he lives in this world that feels so real. And I think there's some really big advantages to that. Plus, it's a short film, and like Pixar gets to like show off all their cool technology.
Yeah, I think this one hit a lot better for me than it did the photorealistic The Blue Umbrella.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the fact that it was the graphics at all or the animation. It was really the story, which just goes to show that the story really is what makes a difference. It could be stick figures on a piece of paper for all I care, as long as the story is compelling. And this was a very simple story, but it was about, and it was a very Western story. You know, there's a character who has a problem and struggles and then finds a way to overcome that problem at the end. Right. So very simple, but it left a smile on my face. So definitely a hit for me as far as Pixar shorts go.
Stick figures. Mm-hmm. Y'all heard it from Morgan. Like, y'all can go ahead and greenlight the stick figure movie. We have an audience.
We do, yes. I was always okay. The part that really made me laugh so much was when he first gets hit by the water, and then he comes up and he's just like twitching. He's like,
he's obviously traumatized.
And at that moment, you're like, I really can relate to this guy.
Really?
And then,
well,
no,
it's scary for him.
Yeah, not really, but it's funny.
Have you ever been a kid? And I don't know. Maybe Morgan was completely fearless and was like one of the Rocket Power kids. But have you ever, like, as a kid, like, been introduced to a new experience and it scared the crap out of you the first time it happened, and it killed it for you, and maybe you left it alone for years, you know, because you were so traumatized. But you know, eventually your mom got you to come out, or it was one of those things where, like, you as a kid had to, like, make it your own. You had to overcome your fear yourself and find your own way to overcome it. And then you were all in, you know. And no amount of your parents telling you, it's okay, you know, it's not even that deep, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
To tell you otherwise. That's what I got a vibe from that. I have some stories to tell about my little sister about that, but that would take too long. I can relate. And Piper is so adorable. Notice how, like, Pixar just seems to specialize in showing and not telling a story without heavy use of dialogue. Like, for me, like,
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
The way Pixar does a lot of these short films with zero dialogue, all with expressive animation, it's just so masterful. Like, it helps me as the audience, like, focus on the animation performance. And it's a much bigger challenge for the animator. And it creates like a more universally communicable story. Like they don't have to translate Piper into Spanish or Mandarin or anything. Mm-hmm. Everyone can understand what's happening just through expressive animation.
Yeah. And they're like the little crabs that like show them the way. Like that was super cute. I did like how when he finally like gets under the water and opens his eyes and he looks around, oh, it's not so bad. Aww. And then like all the clams like are popping up and he's like, that was, I mean, it was exactly what you're saying. Very expressive. The storytelling was just excellent how they did it. And I honestly thought that the humor was also in the same line as Finding Aww. Dory, which was obviously it's, I mean, it was executive produced by Andrew Stanton and John Lasseter. So I
Good old
get
Lassie.
That. That it would good old lassie. But I get it that it would be that way, and I'm glad that they meshed so well together.
Morgan, where does this rank in your Pixar short films?
I don't know if I necessarily have that ranking off the top of my head. It's hard because it was very cute and adorable, but is it my favorite? And I've heard a lot of people say this is one of their favorite Pixar shorts. I can't make that call at this time. I think I'd have to watch it again. I think I have to watch all of them again to really see. It's maybe more probably middle.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's still some really great ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, was it as entertaining as Presto? No. But I think the animation was just as good.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't pull off as many tricks with the animation as Presto did. Get it? And, But yeah, totally adorable, totes adorbs, and it's just so cool. Like, I was looking at all the sea foam and the way they did the effect of the sea, you know, the pores open up and the clams come out. Like, man, that's just something else.
Mm-hmm. And Morgan and I were talking about it leaving the theater that night, and just how great I felt like these both. This one and Finding Dory, they caricatured real life animals so well that we felt like, yeah, you've seen this before. And it's just really funny how, I mean, you look at this movie versus some of the past movies that we've done in the last 3 weeks. It's just pretty amazing how different the reviews are.
I can't even remember the last one we did.
Others.
Song of the Sea?
I'm not talking about Song of the Sea.
Are you talking about Angry Turds?
The one prior.
Oh, that no. would have been yes. more entertaining. Maybe Seth Rogen can voice in that one too. But yeah, I really liked this short. I don't know. I would have to pit it against Blue Umbrella to really, really put it in like a ranking as far as like the Pixar shorts go. Because like at this point, like, can you even compare them, you know? Lava was very stylized, but also had very photorealistic, like, terrain building and stuff like that. You know, on the side of his volcano face.
Well, is that the only thing you're comparing it on? Is its animation style?
Nah, you
or
know
is it
me.
Holistically as the whole thing?
You know me. My ranking systems are both arbitrary and highly complex, and only I understand them.
We love it.
Like my Death Space.
Cool. So let's move on to Finding Dory. the main event, the thing that we are so excited to talk about, the whole world is talking about. Let's first give you some good old statistics. So obviously the studio is Disney Pixar. Directors are Andrew Stanton, and he had a co-director. It was Angus McLean.
Yeah.
So it was released June 17th, 2016 in the United States. And budget was $200 million. And as of recently, as of today or yesterday, it made $205.3 million worldwide. However, I am pulling up an article that one of the writers did on the website, Alex, and it talks about the box office for its opening weekend, and it made $136.2 million in the opening weekend, which now makes it the highest opening ever for an animated film, knocking off previous king, Shrek the Third, which was 121, so it beat it by about $15 million. Pretty crazy because, you know, it's funny. Wow. Like, I think about Shrek the Third, and I'm like, that movie's not even that great.
However, it was the hype.
At the time, Shrek was just such this powerhouse of, you know, of a franchise that everyone went to see it, even though ultimately, you know, I don't think the film really stands up. However, Finding Dory, I think 10 years from now, we will absolutely say that it has stood the test of time, or at least I'd hope. So kind of excited that a very worthy film has the top place, which is pretty cool. So I have a few other statistics about box office, of course, getting all of the statistics from Wikipedia, Box Office Mojo, and also our own website. But let's see. It mentioned that this is actually the second highest opening for a Walt Disney Studios motion picture behind Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. So behind an asterisk of a movie that is not Marvel or Star Wars for the Disney slate. So there's Marvel and Star Wars films, which, of course, make so much money. If you cut those franchises out, it's Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, and then Finding Dory. So for openings, as far as openings go. Pretty cool and pretty exciting. You know, it's transitioning into legacy. You know, I openly went into this movie not very excited. From the moment this film was announced, I was not on board. I was not pumped. It definitely felt like a money grab for me. And even reading about the history of this film, Disney did, you know, Disney, the parent company, did kind of poke and prod at Pixar and say, hey, how about those sequels? Hey, you got a sequel? And they asked Pixar if they were open to the idea. And Andrew Stanton, who is, you know, the original director of Finding Dory, said basically, no, never. I don't do sequels. I'm not going to. But then he started thinking about a story, you know, separately, and finally came around to pitching it to Lasseter, who was definitely on board. And then after, you know, they hired a screenwriter, they then talked to Ellen, who, if you have any history with Ellen or the Ellen Show, you know that for years, it was kind of this inside joke on her show that she was always being like, hey, Disney, Finding Nemo 2, hey, right? So her wish came true.
Yeah.
Well, she tends to campaign a lot for a lot of things, and it comes true generally. So word of advice, when you stick to something long enough, it's probably going to come your way.
Yeah, be careful be careful what you wish for it will surely be yours, or something like that. But I don't really think that Finding Dory was a bad thing. Like, I didn't enjoy Cars 2, and that made me worry about this film. Like, that was so, like, centered around a strong side character.
Mm-hmm.
And with Cars 2, it was, like, all Mater all the time. Just Mater, Mater, Mater. See you later, Mater, Alligator. And, like, sometimes making the whole film around that, like, one... Like, that character's personality is so large that it, like, creates a vacuum or something like that. Or there's... It does this paradox
overdose
thing where... It's overdose, right?
Yeah.
And there's nowhere for them to go with the plot. It's just a bunch of crazy antics, and it turns into a movie about why we think Mater is funny, you know? Or putting Mater, who is a redneck, in all these weird super spy situations with all these foreign people that he doesn't understand, you know? But I really think they did something cool with this. Like, the premise was not... it wasn't unpredictable. Like, I was like, oh yeah, she finds a parent, okay, I get it, you know. But
yeah,
I feel like they made it very fresh, and they introduced some very strong supporting characters.
Mm-hmm.
That, in my opinion, are just as cool as the ones that we found in Finding Nemo. I guess it's safe to say that. And so I was pleasantly surprised.
Also, one thing they did with Dory is they didn't really exploit some of her character traits or nuances from the first film that made us love her so much, but they gave us a backstory and they gave her new facets to her personality that allowed her to grow and not just be just this one note character. You know, it could have been a movie of her just with all these wacky, crazy, dorky things, right?
Yeah.
Dory things, which there were moments of, but it was a slightly more serious version of Dory because she was really taking her mission seriously and it wasn't just all these wacky antics. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that because we did, when we did get those funny moments, I didn't feel fatigued from, you know, Dory overload. I actually really appreciated the fresh perspective that we had on her backstory, which helped you appreciate her as a character more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I went into this not with high expectations. In fact, they were quite low. I had heard from a friend of a friend, whatever, you know, that type of thing. Basically that they had seen some parts of it and they weren't very excited. They were just like, it was a meh type of a movie. And so I went in thinking it's probably going to be a meh, hopefully a little bit more than a meh type of a movie. And then I came out just so floored of how detailed they went into all of these characters, how they just, they hit on the right notes at the right times. I felt like, as we were talking about the, like, too much Dory, like, there were a couple points, like, toward the beginning where I was like, okay, how much are they going to try and push this? I have, you know, short-term memory loss. Because I feel like if they would have kept that going just, like, one more time, I'd been like, okay, please, like, we get it. We get it. So I feel like they really did a great job, actually, being able to, as you guys said, expand on her and make her feel like she's growing and an actual friend and an actual part of the family.
Oh, yay. Man, the visuals really improved on this one. I don't know. We had like all this, like, you know, the light fog and like the little scum floating around in the water, and the animation, I think was really good. And like stuff like the kelp and like all the different parts of the forest where, like, or not the forest, but, like, you know, the kelp forest and like underwater and all the environments just kind of had their own personality and stuff. And I really think that their technology has just gone so far. And it's interesting because I was like, you know,
ladies and gentlemen,
what are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Piper and Blue Umbrella are so photorealistic. I wonder if they're going to try to go that route and if they're going to struggle to maintain that balance between photorealism or visuals that are true to life or that make sense in real life versus these cartoony characters. And I think they struck a good balance. They had their traditional, you know, low point in the movie where all the colors are desaturated and everything's really dark, and they had all that. And I was really impressed by it. Although, am I the only one who thinks that Marlin looked a little, like, outdated? Like, his face just, like, lacks the dimensionality of the other characters. Maybe it's just clownfish, but his, like, all his facial muscles just seem kind of smushed into his head. And it just seemed a little low-res to me.
I felt like he looked old.
He's old. He's so
like,
old.
Like, wrinkled. You know, like, just kind of his, like, under his eyes and... It just reminds me of the line. It's like, you look worried. That's how I always look. It's like, yeah, you do.
Do you think that Marlin and Nemo, do you think they served a good role in this one? Do you think they could have been left out?
I don't think that we necessarily even needed to have them, which is
really
crazy because they're such staples from the first film. You know, especially Marlin. Marlin really is the driving force as he's finding Nemo. But we could have seen this movie completely without them, and I think it would have been fine. However, I don't think they would have made that movie because I think people would have been very disappointed of where's Marlin and Nemo, these beloved characters. So I think the fact that they were kind of just shunned to these secondary or almost tertiary characters, well, probably secondary, was a good thing. It allowed Dory to shine, but it really wasn't Nemo and Marlin's story at all. Yes, they were trying to find Dory as Dory was trying to find herself, more or less, but it could have done without. We could have just had Dory's story about how she went on this adventure to find her parents and came back, and I think the overall story would have been well served. But I think it was fine having them, but if they were cut out, I don't think I'd miss them that much.
It's tough because they weren't in the film that much, obviously, because the star of the show is Dory and she meets a cast of new characters. And so, like, Nemo and Marlin, they were on screen for very little time and they had to make their time count. And so a lot of it was just kind of this, like, banter going back and forth. And, like, Marlin was, like, still... Like, Marlin still has trust issues. Like, he didn't trust anyone in the ocean when he was out looking for his son. Because of what happened in his past, and he doesn't really trust Dory to, like, get by on her own, you know? And so...
He's still acting like he's still the overprotected father.
Yeah, and he doesn't want Nemo to get lost again, you know? Doesn't want to have to go out. He hates the drop-off. Why is it that every time we're here, I lose someone? But yeah, there's that, and then there's that moment when Marlin just gets fed up with Dory. He does not have the patience for Dory's called a disability, or her problem with her memory that her parents had, and her parents are a whole new thing. But anyway, and then Marlin says that thing, like, why don't you go and forget what happened, because that's what you're good at, you know? And that... Ooh, Nemo's like, whoa, hey, hold it there. Whoa, man.
I feel like the flashback scene was well played at the beginning. At first, I thought it was really going to, like I said, I had low expectations. So when they came in and they're like, oh, they're just like replaying the whole thing again. You know, this is the backstory. And I felt like they did a really good job because they had to bring in some of these characters, like Nemo, like Marlin, and even, you know, Mr. Ray and the sea turtles and everything. The sea turtles was like, it was great because they
really,
well, but it does answer the question of how does he get from this side of the ocean to the other side of the ocean so quickly?
Didn't think through that, and did you, Pixar?
And I want to be able to see the cool turtles again because they're cool, you know. So, I mean, turtles happen to be like crossing at the exact same point when they're like, "Hey guys."
See, I disagree. I agree. At the very beginning of this film, they were really rehashing a lot of the popular moments from the original. You know, like we said, the flashback at the beginning, you know, of when someone was really young, then the drop off, then Mr. Ray and the turtles. And I felt like really once we hit the turtles, I was like, wow, really? We're doing this again, because they didn't add any dimension to the turtles character. There was nothing new that they had provided. It was the exact same plot element as introduced in the first film. I also was super confused as why Little Squirt hadn't even aged at all yet. This was supposed to be a year later.
It's Disney
just
Pixar aging.
I know, but I was like, come on.
Even Nemo is still
I know.
Only DreamWorks characters age now.
Thankfully, that was very short-lived, this kind of initial premise building, and they jumped to this new area, which was basically the West Coast, the Pacific, and jumped into Dory's story and kind of left everything from the first movie behind. They introduced it just to kind of, we have to hit our popular points for some reason. And then they leave that behind, and then you're on a new journey at a new location with new characters. And from that moment on, I finally started getting into it and enjoying it. During the initial maybe first 15 minutes or however long it took, I was just like, here we are again. Like, nothing new. Kind of what I had gone in expecting, just a rehashing of the original.
Yeah, and that's what I was looking for a while, like getting back to getting back to Crush and getting back to Mr. Ray. I think they had to go into Mr. Ray just to kind of show, just to kind of show how the world is different now, you know, or how the world, it's still the same old world. Reestablish us back into that world. Yeah. And then besides a few like cameos at the very, very end after the credits, yeah, there really isn't much after that. And that was really cool. I feel like they did good with the new characters. You know how Disney sequels are with like new friends and new songs, you know? The occasional character brought to life once again by the one and only Robin Williams. And that's it. But I don't know. I like the new characters a lot. Crush was a very convenient way. Plus, it's like you couldn't have a Finding Nemo like universe without Crush. Like it was probably one of those non-negotiables.
Probably. I mean, I was glad to see him in a way. I wasn't thrilled in the fact that I was like, okay, we're doing this again, like the exact same way. I did find it very interesting how this entire movie was made up of comic duos.
Comic duos.
So, for example, yeah, we never change. Comic duos in the fact that it's true.
That's an old school Rotoscopers reference.
That is like episode 7 right there. We have Marlin and Nemo, and they're kind of dynamic, and they're kind of a one. Like you don't have one without the other. And then the two sea lions, you know, those were fun. They were, you know, a duo. And then you have the mom and the dad. They were kind of together. They weren't really a comic or comedic duo, but they were like a pair. And then you have the two whales, and then Dory and Hank. You know, it's just. Every little, the only two that didn't have their comedic duo was Becky and Sigourney Weaver. So
Sigourney Weaver is omniscient.
Best ongoing joke of the whole movie.
I really
really liked it. That was really cool.
I loved
it. I'm a strong supporter of Sigourney Weaver. She was she was amazing in Alien. And all her movies are great, but regarding the Institute and regarding Sigourney Weaver, I have a Pixar theory for y'all. It was postulated by our very own Rachel Wagner, and if y'all are cool and behave yourselves like my Sunday school class, I will tell you the Pixar theory at the end of the episode.
All right.
Oh, we haven't even talked about one of the best duos in the movie, which are Dory's parents in the first place. I love it so much that her parents are golden. This movie isn't about her parents becoming good parents or her parents learning how to, thrive support her in her disability. There's no moment where they're like, you lied to me, you know, or something like that. You know, Dory trusts you.
Yeah. You don't really have short-term memory loss?
Yeah, okay. Was that a yeah, okay? Or was that like a yeah, okay? Or was that a yeah, okay? Just kidding. Okay. Her parents are so sweet and so supportive, and they are so like, oh, they're just great. They're like the golden standard for this film. Like Marlin could take some lessons from these people. And I'm so glad they didn't have to go into the subplot of them actually being terrible parents. And I'm glad that they didn't have like the dad be good and the mom be bad, or the mom be patient with Dory and the dad be non-understanding. Like, I'm glad they didn't do that. I'm glad that they established that, yes, there are some really good parents out there who try really hard and have it down working with children who have, who have memory loss or any type of disability, you know?
Yeah. They were very much a team, and they were very much, you know, very aware and very... Their goal was to help her in all things. And even when she did mess up, it was like they went out of their way to make sure that she was happy, you know, because she was already having these issues. She was already going to feel sad about it because it's not something she can control. And so they're just trying to like help her.
It wasn't that they weren't struggling. Like they're not perfect. Like there's the flashback that she had where she remembers seeing her mom kind of breaking down or kind of needing some support from her husband because it is hard for her, and she was scared for Dory. Like, is she going to be able to make it, you know, when she gets rehabilitated and released out in the open water? Was she going to be okay? And so I guess one of the morals of the story is that you don't have to be the perfect parent, but there's a way to go through the struggle and find joy in life, no matter who your child is, without taking your frustration out on them or without becoming cold or distant, you know? And so it's a very, very big example for parents in general, but also special needs parents or parents of children with special needs.
Yeah, I think it was a story of unconditional love. Like she had her disability and they did their best to raise her and help her grow. And even when she was lost, they still didn't give up on her. It didn't matter that she had X, Y, or Z. It was just because of her, who she was, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First time I saw the movie, because I have seen it twice. It's been out a week. but I the first time I saw it, I didn't get emotional at all, and I just kind of watched it and kind of took it in. But the second time I saw it, man, I really started to feel it, and I really cried. I was just like, I'm so glad that you found each other and that you overcame this and that you can do it. And it's one of those, it really made you kind of like evaluate yourself again, like, this, you know, overcome things, you know.
Yeah, good. That final scene where it shows just all those trails of shells was very, very impactful. And I think, you know, they just do that wide shot and you just see everything that her parents have done over this past year. It was really cool scene. I did not cry at any time during the movie. I know a lot of people have. Did you, Mason?
I came close with the shells. Yeah, I came close.
Watch it again. I promise.
I think
you
I
will.
Actually did. I think promise, I teared up a little bit with The Good Dinosaur. I think. But anyway, hey, I got a question. So, did she bump into that same pillar at the beginning of the movie that her parents were living under, or was that like a flashback? Because I remember seeing that pillar. Like, there's all the kelp, and then there's that pillar. It was sometime before the movie.
It's like when she first arrives, because she's underneath that boardwalk. Yeah. I don't know if it was the exact same one.
Oh, I really hope it wasn't. It'd be
like,
freaking
hello?
August Rush all over again. But y'all know how I feel about that. I hate it when they do this in the movies where they're looking for someone and they barely miss them. You know, like there's a UPS truck in front of them or they didn't look the right way or, you know, something like that. They just barely miss each other. And they have to go through the whole movie to like grow and get over their personal conflicts and wrap up the story. And then they find each other. Like, I'm not a fan of that. And so I was like, trigger warning, Mason. but that was a really cute touch with the shells. Like their parents put their faith in the one thing that Dory always remembered. And that's like, that's really sweet. It's a really cool story, like nugget there.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I noticed the first time, but I didn't notice the second time. But the first time I really appreciated how there was this one moment, like right when Dory is meeting with her family and it's such a sweet and tender thing, the lighting in the ocean was a little bit darker and a little bit warmer, kind of like wrapped around her. Aww. And the music itself, there was this one specific moment when she got her idea of, oh my gosh, I have to go find Marlin and Nemo. And right then the lighting just like brightened up ever so slightly and the music changed in that moment. And I was like,
how do you do it?
I just, all of these things all going into one. I was really impressed with just the finite details of that, just to really engulf you with everything. And how did you guys feel about the music? I mean, I thought it was good. The music itself, it wasn't, for me, it didn't like stand out until the specific songs with words. But in moments like that, I appreciated that he was able to really lay the foundation, and it wasn't something that you were really supposed to notice, I don't think.
Yeah, I didn't notice the music one way or another. I mean, going back, I don't think of any moment where it was super impactful to me or that I just remember. I feel like the Inside Out soundtrack was very, very, very memorable. And you could be like, oh, yeah, there was a piano that had this little tune and this. But yeah. Finding Dory, I couldn't tell you one thing about the soundtrack. Not saying that it was a bad soundtrack, but I don't think it was really one of those soundtracks that really stood out.
I'm not sure if it was supposed to.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
not a bad thing either way.
So, the ending.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, you're declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Well, we're jumping right to the end.
Holy, holy cow.
No, 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 no.
Okay.
There is one character I want to talk about, and that is Hank.
Yeah, we got to talk about all the new characters.
All right. I love
Breakout
Ed
characters.
O'Neill.
Let's hear it.
He is my favorite character on Modern Family, and I love him even more than Ty Burrell. And I thought he was great. So, one, Hank is a technical marvel of animation.
Ooh.
Like, there's all sorts of features on YouTube and the internet and stuff going around with, like, how much it took
to make him invisible.
I think it's like a 2 week development and creation time for like a shader for like a character's like skin, but this one took 22 weeks, probably partially because they had to figure out how to blend the surfaces together, and also he had to mimic all the surfaces in the film.
You can't
just turn on transparency and turn it off. Like, it's a little more complicated than that. But not only that, but all the points of articulation on his tentacles and how, where his center of gravity was going to be, like planning all that. Like I would love to sit down and hear a presentation on just the rigging for Hank and all the control systems and stuff. These bigger studios, man, when they make their controls for their animators, like, it's almost down to like a molecular level how exact they can be, so they can really get those expressions and poses and things. And Hank, like, I was watching him and it was like watching the Joker in The Dark Knight. It's like, how is this happening in front of me? Like, this is such an amazing performance. Only it was for an animated film. And so I haven't felt this way about an animated character since Penguins of Madagascar with Dave, who is also an octopus, which is amazing. Octopuses do very well. Davy Jones, Dave from Penguins of Madagascar, Hank from this movie, Ursula. Famous octopuses, true, okay, in animation.
I think you're just an octophile.
Yeah, that means different things in different countries, I'm sure. But
I don't want to look that up. Let's not look that up, just in case.
Someone else Google it for us. And then, I just find them, actually, my own art, I tend to draw, you know, things with tentacles and things with these beautiful, you know, spline curves for their arms and stuff like that. And, you know, the Kraken and all that stuff. And it's very, very challenging. I mean, but I loved Hank. The one thing I didn't understand about him was his motivations. He is visibly, like, he is very afraid of the ocean. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to go back. Mm-hmm. Did we establish why he doesn't want to go back to the ocean?
No, I thought we were going to get to that point, and we never did. We just kind of was given this reasoning for why he wanted to leave and then just took it from there. It was never revealed to us, even at the end, why he had this fear of what should be maybe a refuge for some, or not even a refuge, why he would be a prison, right? Most people would want to get out and go back to freedom, go back to the ocean, but he wanted to stay in and did everything.
He wants to go to,
and Cleveland, it wasn't clear, and it's still kind of question.
He was
mark.
A septipus.
He was a septipus.
But but that wasn't answered either.
Maybe, like, when he lost his tentacle, and it was a bad experience.
Well, he had a bad experience.
Nice.
Maybe he got into the food processor again.
By the way, maybe. Octophile is someone who loves the 80s, so...
Oh,
I'm an
octophile.
I'm
I love
sure
the 80s.
I'm sure that, too.
Everybody's working for the weekend. That was an 80s moment by your resident octophile, Mason Smith.
Why do we think that Hank and Dory were paired up? Was it just because they were so opposite in temperament?
Right. You had it's a classic storytelling technique, is like, take a character with this personality and pair them with someone, with the worst person you could always pair, you could ever pair them up with. Right. Or take the main character and put them in, and take their motivations and their desires and personality and put them in the worst place they could possibly be, which happens a lot in Pixar films. And so I think that right. Hank and Dory make a good character because Hank is so completely annoyed by Dory and he learns to kind of have a heart, you know, for a guy with three hearts.
Well, I thought about that. And then I also thought, well, there's also the fact that they both have something wrong with them. I mean, I think this whole movie is kind of like everybody has something wrong.
Well, they are being rehabilitated.
Yeah.
I mean, this used to be a SeaWorld park, you know, back in earlier years, but with that CNN documentary that came out.
Blackfish.
I guess they felt a little social pressure and decided to change it to something a little more lighthearted, a little more happier, a little more positive, which is a fish rehabilitation center. And I have a little sister who's in wildlife and fisheries and forestry management or something like that. And she's a big proponent of rehab centers where people can educate themselves on these animals rather than, you know, basically circus theme parks where these animals are kind of, some would say, you know, forced to perform and they go crazy in these confined places. And so it helps avoid that from a social standpoint. And it also helps avoid the humans being the bad guys. Like Pixar always makes humanity the bad guy, but in a very subtle way that isn't the main conflict of the film. It's just an afterthought or a reminder or whatever. And I don't think I would have enjoyed the film as much if there was like a psychotic sushi chef who breaks into SeaWorld and wants to make a beluga whale burger or something like
le
that.
Poisson, le poisson.
What is this? It could have been the evil chef from Ratatouille. You know, he's up to no good and he wants to make a blue tang sushi and there's just a tank full of blue tangs. But anyway.
So let's talk about the other new characters. So we have Bailey, the beluga.
Pew!
Oh, my new special power.
I love Ty Burrell. I can hear everything you're saying.
I know you're talking about me.
Does anyone, any of you kids want to talk about echolocation? Boo! Ty Burrell is my man. Okay, I liked Bailey, and I thought that his use of echolocation was a little unrealistic, but it's a Pixar film. It's an animated film, I know. Stylized. But it was really interesting how they cast Ty Burrell. Do y'all remember Mr. Peabody and Sherman?
Yes.
Was that not a very interesting and inventive casting choice for Ty Burrell? Like, he went in there, and he wasn't Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. Like, he made his own character, or he molded to Mr. Peabody. You know, he was he was wise and he was knowledgeable and he was calculating and he was very left-brained, whereas I feel like Ty Burrell oftentimes plays a very right-brained person, someone who works off of intuition and emotion, kind of like yours truly. And sometimes I feel like hardcore animation fans, they like turn their nose up to productions where they cast a Hollywood actor to play themselves, basically, you know, like your Samuel L. Jackson's or
Sigourney Weaver.
Right. And I don't want Pixar to necessarily go that route. I liked how they used Tom Hanks as Woody. Who was Buzz Lightyear again? What's his name? Tim Allen. Okay. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen. Yeah. And I feel like they were all pretty inventive and like Bug's Life, maybe not so much. I don't know. But I like it when they bring in voice actors who like invent a new character for themselves. Kind of like when we talked about like Don Bluth bringing in Tom Selleck, and he just wanted Tom Selleck. He didn't want Tom Selleck to do this dog voice that he worked, you know, several weeks on. So, you know, I guess it's about name recognition and stuff like that. But
yeah, it's just a matter of the landscape that we live in right now. I mean, recently I posted an article about the new My Little Pony, the movie logo was released, and in there there's the same voice actresses who play the main six, as they are known. But then it was like also a great cast of A-list celebrities. I'm like, Yep, that's just the world
My
we live in.
Pony. Well, I'm sure that the Brony community would love to be feel validated by having these big time celebrities voice in their movie, but I feel like it's a lot about that. It's a fans of Ellen DeGeneres will see this movie because like Ellen DeGeneres' personality is very much ingrained in Dory. Like that's probably why they cast her in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I'm not being really hard on this policy. I just think it's interesting that there is definitely a difference where it's like a celebrity basically playing themselves versus a big time voice celebrity like transforming into a completely new character. And that's totally up to production and the director and stuff. Like obviously these stars don't have a say.
Obviously. Hollywood man. All right, the other new character was the whale shark.
Oh yeah.
Who also is known as Destiny. Aww. I thought she was really adorable. I love the moments where she was just sitting there and she was kind of swimming around in her tank, just bumping into things. Because we've all been there. We've been in an aquarium or something where just one of the creatures is just totally out of it.
And they're having a bad day.
Yeah, I laughed every time she ran into something. It was just kind of funny.
Morgan.
A nearsighted whale shark, I must add.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was funny. Everyone in, especially these three new characters that we meet at the sanctuary, Hank is missing a limb. Bailey has this self-imposed illness on himself that he had lost his echolocation. And then Destiny has this nearsightedness that she needs to overcome. And it's just interesting that everyone seems to have their own thing that they have to work to overcome or grow and develop.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it makes sense for the park that they're in.
Yes, particularly, yes.
Yeah.
And so talking about the location, so that's one thing that I really did enjoy about this movie is that we were, instead of just being in the deep blue sea, we had a new location that really separated this from the first film where we're in this marine wildlife rehabilitation, you know, park, which was really exciting, and you know, and definitely understood why they went that route versus like a Sea World or whatnot. But it made this movie feel so completely separate and different, allowed for new situations, new characters. I think if this was just searching, you know, aimlessly in the ocean, it would have very much felt like Finding Nemo. And so this new setting where the majority of the film does happen, I think really set it apart and made it work. And it was just, they were able to be very clever with how she was able to move from tank to tank. And, you know, I really have a hard time believing that a location like that has slots in the pipes in between tanks that are so big that fish can just slide right through them. I feel like this would be a problem that not just Dory was going to fall through, but thousands of fish, especially in that big tank, were Dory size or smaller and definitely would have gone through the pipes. So that doesn't seem very, very realistic to me. But then again, I highly doubt this crazy pigeon carrying two fish in a pail is realistic either. So I need to ignore any of that.
Speaking of pipes,
Pixar.
Actually, I mean, I've gone to, you know, places like that and seen like the random fish. It's like, how did he get in over here? So
he doesn't look like he belongs. Yeah. Can I just talk about pipes for a second?
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who are you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Destiny and Dory established that they were pipe buddies. And then right afterward, they're like, yeah, just go through that pipe, turn a left, and then a right. And Dory has this huge problem. And it doesn't occur to them then that Destiny can talk her through the pipes, but they did it an hour later, you know?
Well, because she couldn't see in the pipes.
Well yeah, they used echolocation to
they
get
use
a
echolocation.
Map.
Yeah, but all she had to do was go a left, and a right. So all the whale had to do was talk her through it.
Yes, but there was no way to know whether Dory was on the first stage or the second stage, right? Like, you could take Dory's word for it, but what if she was actually at the second left and it was the first? And
okay.
You know what I mean? I guess, right?
Well, all right.
I think we're overanalyzing this a bit too much.
Well, I noticed it. I was like, oh, just talk her through the pipes now. And they're like, no, there's no other way. We have to take the psychotic pigeon. What was up with that pigeon?
Yeah,
am I the only person who didn't like Becky?
I liked that was Mikey. A very odd character, but it is what it is.
Top the seagulls.
Well, I feel like trying to top the seagulls were the two seals. You know, the mine, and then
off.
But it was so true because we've all seen seagulls that act that way, and we've all seen seals.
Or we've at least all seen people that act that
you
way.
You know, exactly. Yes.
It reminds me of Secret Life of Pets with that little pug who brings up the pillow up onto the seat so he can bark at something, and then it goes away, and then he's... And he's fine, you know. Oh, Secret Life of Pets. Yeah, you can't miss Idris Elba. It's like Bill Hader and Idris Elba. I'm surprised Maya Rudolph wasn't in this film. Where was she? Surely she was in talks to be in it, but she had to voice for about 8 other animated films, so she couldn't make this one. But you know, Idris Elba, he talks like this in all his films. You're fired. But anyway, I really like that part. So. We're talking about animals with disabilities. So what disability does Gerald have, and what gives them the right to be so mean to him? Like, is Gerald dumb? Or is Gerald just the guy that no one likes? He kind of has this look that he's a little slow.
He's like the Ed, right?
Ed.
Yeah.
Aw, yeah. But anyway.
Well, that was like the sad thing about that. Is it like he seemed to definitely have some sort of impairment. And yet he was completely being picked on, probably for that reason, which was like, is that a good thing to teach? And they just continued to, they didn't learn. They were just at the very, 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 very end, right? Still on their rock. Off.
Well, maybe he doesn't have a disability. He's just not as pretty as the other sea lions. And so they pick on him for that. So I don't know. I thought he had kind of a Peter Lorre vibe to him.
He does get up and he's got that look like, I've done this before.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was cute. They were like the new seagulls. Definitely.
Mine. good old seagulls.
I just want to say I felt like they spent more time out of water than in water in this film.
Yeah, totally.
did y'all think that Hank was going to be kind of a Lotso Huggin' Bear villain at the end?
I didn't.
No.
Which was good, because I feel like we'd maybe been conditioned to think that after all these different movies.
Oh my gosh.
There really wasn't a villain, per se.
Oh, Dory, if only there was a fish who loved you.
One thing I did like, before we kind of talk about wrapping things up in the ending, is this movie had quite a few flashbacks of Dory, and they were kind of peppered in at various moments as Dory is discovering new things, and I really liked that. I mean, can we talk about baby Dory? Her eyes are so big, they're just popping out of the sides of
her
head.
She's all eye. She's like that little bug-eyed dude that Chum had at the shark support group. He was that like little guy. He's like,
totally. All right, let's talk about this crazy, crazy ending. So Dory gets out, she finds her parents, but then, I need to go find Nemo and Marlin because they're my family too, which, you know, is awesome and great. Of course, they're inside, heading to Cleveland.
Yeah.
And they
can't go to the Cleveland.
It's like, wait, I found you, but I left these people, but now we're in trouble, but now we're going to die, but now they're going to die. It's like, okay, everybody stop. We just need to not be in a state where we're going to die all at once, and we'll be okay. Like, you, stay here. Don't do anything. I'm going to go rescue them. You know, and then 5 seconds later, it's like that game Lemmings. But anyway.
As you're talking about, I just think about the moment when she actually realizes, or she thinks that her parents are dead, and just like everything just goes crazy. It was just like
panic attack. That's a straight up animated panic attack.
Mm-hmm. They did a great job of animating that too, because you're just like, I can't take it.
I felt really bad for her then, just like I felt really bad for Jessie when she was having her panic attack in Toy Story 2. Like, it was very much driving that kind of vibe home.
Yeah.
I thought the ending with the crazy scene with the truck and, you know, Hank driving the truck and whatnot, that's when it started just going. I mean, it was just like, just go with it, I guess.
Yeah.
Hank grabs a gun, starts shooting out the police's tires. It's America's Most Wanted is a septopus.
Yeah, at that point, there was really nothing you could do with it. And I'm sure the filmmakers were like, yes, we know this is completely absurd, but just go with it, people. Just go with it. And it's particularly hit the high point when they are flying off you know, the cliff and the music plays.
Skies of blue.
That's
clouds of white.
The pinnacle of, yes, we know this is ridiculous. Here, we're going to put this song on top of this moment. Just
that
yes,
song.
Enjoy it.
I'm sorry. I just think that song is the most cliche song to play in an animated film. It's like
that's
Madagascar
why they
did it years ago. That's why they did it, I guess, you know.
It almost validated how crazy the whole scene was by playing that and doing the slow-mo. It was like, okay, yes, they are very much acknowledging this is absurd.
I'm glad
and
that
then
Hank,
that made it almost okay.
I guess it did. I mean, any other studio, I suppose. But I'm glad that Hank had the common sense to get them out of the way of the truck. He was smarter than Mrs. Incredible, you know. And, you know, when they were in the ocean.
True.
So I was glad for that little detail. Watch, the truck should have plowed through him and just killed him and cut to black in the end credits.
I was concerned. I'm like, they're right here. Truck is coming. They're dead. Oh, no, they moved. Okay, we're good.
One of them's going to die, but they're not really going to die because it's Finding Nemo. I don't know.
All right. So Easter eggs. Did you guys catch any?
Did anyone get the John Ratzenberger? It was a tough one.
I did not.
He didn't talk like this.
Where was he?
He
was he the sick fish?
He was the crab who was mowing the lawn. They altered his voice to be a little squeakier.
That's awesome.
Oh, okay.
So other Easter eggs, I did not see these. No credit goes to me. I'll include a link in the show notes of where sharp-eyed viewers have been able to find Pixar Easter eggs. So the first one, the classic Pixar ball, that was found in the actual Marine Rehabilitation Center. There was a kind of a kid zone, and you can see that kind of in the kid zone around there, which totally makes sense. The Pizza Planet truck, when they're first getting on the road, there's kind of a traffic jam, and the truck is on the freeway there. The A113 is found in two different places. The first place, it's on the tags of the two sea lions. One says A1 and the other one says 13.
Yeah.
And then there also is a license plate that says CALA113, which is like CalArts or Cal A113.
Yep.
And then let's see, what are the other big Easter eggs? Those are the kind of the main ones, right? Ratzenberger, the ball, Luxo Jr.
I don't think he's a regular one.
No. So, anyways, those were some of the big Easter eggs that have been found. There's also quite a few more that are in here. There's also there's a Wall-E calendar in the first area where Hank finds Dory.
That's
on the wall.
Right.
There is a Wall-E calendar. There is a
cute
magnet that looks like that is from lava.
Oh.
And Darla makes a cameo. There's a
photo
of her in the way in the background. So yeah, I'll just include a link. There's cool other inside Easter eggs, so you can find those yourself. And if you have found ones that aren't on this list, definitely let us know in the comments at rotoscopers.com/126.
I felt like this movie had much more of a close than Finding Nemo did. Like this one, they like actually go out to the drop off and they're enjoying the view. I felt like that it kind of ended in a different way. Like it left me happy that she found her way and she did it. But at the same time, it was kind of like I don't know. It was an interesting feeling that I had with the ending.
I feel the same way as Marlin. Nobody ever go to the drop off again. We're done. Close the story.
Ever.
Yeah. I didn't stay for the credits, although we were piling out of the theaters and the theater and I saw all the Hank, you know, stuff, which was cute. And I mean, the animators should definitely show off Hank's awesomeness. But
you didn't stay for the ending credits?
No, I know that the ending credits scene, I know what it's about or like what's in it. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, wouldn't they run out of air in their bags after a year? But
yeah, that seemed very unrealistic as well.
It just seemed very fatalist. Like I was really rooting for them in the first movie, and now they're still in those bags, and they land right into captivity again, or something like that.
That's, I thought it was funny. I liked it because you kind of did want to see them again. And so it was nice to have them back. And I just thought it was funny. This, how did we feel as this is a sequel?
It was the better sequel by Pixar. I think I enjoyed it more than Monsters University. And I think I definitely enjoyed it more than Cars 2. And so, I mean, here's for hoping that Cars 3 will be pretty good.
So someone else asked in the comments, how did you feel about, so what would you prefer, this one or Zootopia, which are the kind of the two heavy hitters of animation this year?
I prefer Zootopia.
They both had a really good feel for them. This one got me more emotionally than Zootopia did, but Zootopia was so thought-provoking.
Yeah. They were definitely provoking, but yeah, I really enjoyed Zootopia because I guess I gotta go anthro more than like stylistic fish and stuff like that. I don't know. I don't know if I would compare the two. I like them both. I don't need to have a ranking, I guess.
Perfect. We will not have a ranking. However, if you have a ranking, let us know in the comments at rotoscopers.com/126. All right, so before we give our final thoughts and ratings, we have two voicemails. So those of you who are listening to this podcast and you sent a voicemail in, but it hasn't been played, like we said, we did record this a little earlier. So the cutoff for voicemails were basically those who were the very, very early birds. They got the worm. There are two people who have sent voicemails in. We will listen to those, and then if we do get some additional ones and have time, we might add some additional ones reviews in for the audio version. So if you're listening to this and you're like, what are you talking about, there's 17 voicemails, it's because we've added them in after the fact, and that's why we won't be commenting on them, because anyway, that's basically inside baseball that no one cares about. Let's get to our first one, which is Daniel. Take it away, Daniel.
Hey, Rotoscopers, it's Daniel. I thought I'd
hey, Daniel,
leave a voicemail for your Finding Dory episode, because why not? I just got back from seeing a late-night screening of it, and I was really excited to see this movie because I love the first one. I grew up with it. It was the first movie I ever saw in theaters, so nostalgia is obviously a big thing for me with this movie and most Pixar films. And so I didn't really know if this one was going to be as good as the first one. I mean, how could they top what they did with Finding Nemo? Finding Nemo is a near-perfect movie, at least I think. Not exactly one of my higher-up favorite Pixar films, but I love it nonetheless, and it's pretty untouchable. So is it crazy to say that I think I like Finding Dory better?
Whoa!
I think what I liked better about it was the emotion. Finding Nemo had funny moments and kind of sad moments, but to me, Finding Dory, the funny moments had me laughing out loud in the theater, and the sad moments had me holding back tears. So I think for that, that's probably why I like Finding Dory better. That, and I love the new characters that they brought to the story, and yeah, I loved it. Great movie. So I had two questions. One of them was, what is your favorite quote from the movie? Mine is at the very beginning when Dory is a guppy and she's playing hide and seek with her parents, and this one line had everyone in the theater howling, and me included, and it's when she goes,
"I like sand."
That, I don't know why, it was great. And second off, is there, since Toy Story 4 is coming out, I was wondering, is there a sequel to a Pixar film you would be more interested in seeing other than Toy Story 4? The Toy Story trilogy is my most favorite Pixar film, one of my favorite trilogies, and Toy Story is my favorite animated film. But I'm more interested in seeing an Incredibles 2. I think the first one was tailor-made for a sequel.
Hello!
And I would be much more interested in seeing what they do with those characters, because they've already done a lot with the Toy Story characters, and I'm not too interested in them reopening the series after closing it so perfectly. So that's all I had to say. Thanks for everything. Thanks for your time, and thank you.
Well, thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, he had two questions. First one was, what is your favorite quote from the film?
What the carp? There is another way. That one was one of my favorites.
I'd have to watch it again to know what my favorite line was. The only one I can think of is off, off, off.
Off, 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 off. I liked when Dory misunderstands and thinks that she has to explain the birds and the bees.
Oh, why me?
Oh, wow. Didn't think I would have to give this talk. Okay. Well, when two fish love each other. And yeah, Mr. Ray shuts her down. I like that one. And then the second one was, is there a Pixar sequel upcoming or imaginary or otherwise that we'd be more excited to see than Cars 3, right?
No.
Or Toy Story 4.
Toy Story 4.
Incredibles 2.
Yeah, The Incredibles 2. That's the one that Daniel said. And we're right with you there, man. I want to see, like, superhero films are so in vogue now. I don't think we'll ever get sick of them. We need to see Pixar take a stab at that.
Again.
Again.
Ha ha ha.
Again! Pirates so, 4.
Oh, yeah. Kind of like, never mind. All right, next one is Dylan, who sent us his review.
Dylan.
So let's check out Dylan.
Dylan.
Hey, Chelsea, Morgan, and Mason. It's Dylan, and I hope you're having a wonderful summer so far.
Hi, Dylan.
I just got out of a screening of Finding Dory, and I honestly loved it, and it was super cute, and I just have some things to say about it. First off, I'm not like a huge fan of Pixar sequel-itis, but I also know that this is a business and it's inevitable. So I do think that if these sequels must exist, then they should be this good. I think it's worth making alone for Ellen DeGeneres as Dory. The whole movie really is kind of hinged on her emotional performance, and I've remained invested the whole way through, which I think is really important. It's really also nice to see updated character designs. One thing I do like about these sequels and prequels is that it's really cool to see how far Pixar has come with their animation and characters. So it's kind of nice to see old friends look all new and shiny. I do think that the memories in the movie were kind of divisive, but I thought it was also a good way to keep the plot going. And it's also like really awesome to see little Dory because she's so freaking adorable.
Agreed.
I do think like these sequels are generally harmless. Like this one is not as good as Finding Nemo, but it doesn't ruin Finding Nemo at all. It might even make Finding Nemo a little bit better in a way. I just had a really good night at the movies, which is what's important. I'm Sigourney Weaver. Thank you for joining me.
Aw, awesome. With the Sigourney Weaver impersonation. I love it. Dylan, thank you so much for leaving your voicemail. You have a very mature view of the animation industry in that you recognize that sometimes these, like, milking the cash cow just has to happen. And there's a lot that goes into it. There's more, I don't know, from the artists that I have had contact with in various studios, like, it exists. The politics and the bureaucracy and, like, the deciding based on money rather than art. And it happens to one degree or another all the time in every studio. There's no animation studio that's exempt from it. And it's just a reality. But Pixar does such a masterful job of elevating animation to an art form.
I don't think that having the politics and the money and everything is necessarily a bad thing either.
Definitely
because
not.
If you didn't have to make the best movie in order to get the most money, you know, it wouldn't push you to make a better movie. You know, it's all these things that they'd have to happen in order for you to really push yourself. So I'm fine. I have no qualms with, maybe not no qualms. I just hope that they do it well.
You know, I think people come in with higher expectations and that'll eschew the rating that they give it or how they enjoy it.
As far as if this is going to be have a third. I think that it's definitely going to be Finding Flow.
Finding back, Bruce, you know? Man. It's all about Finding Bruce. He never knew his father. That's gold. That's your story right there. You could have a story about a fearsome shark who meets his father and struggles with proving to his father that he's a real shark, but in the inside, he doesn't want to eat fish. And wait, I'm,
Wait,
they already made that movie. Sorry. Back away. They already made Finding Bruce. It's called Shark Tale.
Oh, awesome.
Hello, everyone. Discovery, this is me, Sarah, again, and I did just get to see Finding Dory, and I really loved it. I'm about to listen to the live stream on it, and it's just a really stellar movie, and I can't wait to watch it again. I loved everything. I loved the Sea Lions and Daughters, especially, and Dory. Dory was great. But, yeah, I have to give it a four and a half out. No, I'm going to just give it a 4 out of 5. Also, congratulations to Morgan and Chelsea. And Mason, I think I forgot you. I still love all three of you. Bye, guys.
All right, so what would you guys rate this film?
So leaving the theater for me, I felt like I really wanted to watch it again when it was done. And that doesn't happen very often. As far as like, I could watch this again right now. And you know, when you were a kid, you're like, you actually did, you had the VHS and you like, rewind, let's do it again. So I felt like this was, had a lot of that. And I really liked the one-liners. I feel like that they were both, they both shined in both movies, and they kind of accentuated each other. And just like what Dylan said, is that it made the story of Finding Nemo better, having this story in there to kind of complete the whole journey. So I'm going, vacillating between 4 and 4.5. And I think I'm going to give it 4.5 because I actually did cry the second time I watched it.
Holy cow.
So
she didn't cry when old Yeller died.
Actually, I did.
Oh. At least not in front of her friends.
I don't watch those movies in front of people.
I was quoting a country music song, Chelsea. I thought you would know.
What did you rate it, Mason?
Who, me?
Yes.
You want to know what I rated this film?
What do you think? I want to know.
I don't know. 3.5, 4. Let's just go with 4. I don't want the Pixar people to like grab their torches and pitchforks.
Well, you need to be honest. Who cares what the Pixar people think? What do you think?
Those people. 4 out of 5 stars. It was really good. Like,
all right.
It was really great for a sequel. I don't know. I have to go back to my ratings and see if I've rated a Pixar film lower than this, but I don't know. It was really good. Like, very well done.
I am also going to give it 4 out of 5 stars. I really thoroughly enjoyed this film. I thought that it had a lot of comedic moments tied with very emotional moments. It was somewhat unexpected in how well everything came together. I loved everything that was done as far as the new characters that were introduced, the new settings, the new side of Dory that we didn't really get to see in the other films. And so I think for those reasons, it made this film very fresh, not necessarily as, you know, spectacular as Finding Nemo is. Not saying that it's that much further down. However, I feel like it's at least at par, slightly below. So 4 stars for that reason. And I want to give props to Andrew Stanton because, you know, he had just come back from, oh, what was that movie that he did? And it was like this huge flop. John Carter, right? And was it John Carter? Is that the movie? Yes, John Carter. And I feel like he was given this chance in live action, and it just, the movie, just the way that it was promoted by Disney and whatnot, audiences just really didn't take to it. And he is an incredible filmmaker, and I'm just really grateful that Pixar said, hey, come back. We love you. We know who you are. We know the storyteller that you are. We appreciate your work. And he was able to come back, and I was glad that he was actually open to, you know, making a sequel when he'd kind of been like, no sequels, no capes. And I appreciate this movie. I feel that it really does pair quite nicely with the original. So reading out ratings from those in the live chat. So we have Animation Nerd Girl, who gave it 9.4 out of 10, which is a 4.2 out of 5. Rachel Wagner also gives it 4 out of... Oh, no. She says 4 out of 5 is fair. She's commenting on Mason's review. Fadi gave it, what did he give it? He gave it something and then it disappeared. So I'm not quite sure what happened to his review.
Well, the chat,
oh, 7 out of 10.
Chat auto updates when someone types something new. So it's kind of hard to track it.
And then Fallow Skies gives it 3 out of 5. So kind of all over the map. No 5 out of 5s for sure. Although the 4.2.
I saw 5 out of 5 earlier.
You did? Okay. So there's just so many people chatting, I just can't keep up, right?
We're so popular.
All 12 live viewers that we have. So anyways, thank you so much for those who did join live and were involved in the discussion. You guys are getting the sneak peek of the podcast before we release it on our normal release schedule. So, by the time you're listening to the audio version, this is already out, but it'll probably be a week and a half till this comes out if you're listening to the YouTube version and want to hear the audio version for some reason. Yes, so that is that. Tips for you guys, if you want to comment on this episode and give us your review, your rating, your thoughts, go to rotoscopers.com/126. I have all sorts of show notes. If I mention an article, Easter eggs, I'll include a link to my review in there. You will find all of those links in the show notes at rotoscopers.com/126. Also, links to the soundtrack if you'd like to purchase that on iTunes or Amazon. And hey, who knew? You can also pre-order Finding Dory right now. So I included the pre-order link. If you loved it so much that you're already ready to get in line to purchase, you can find that there. Another way to support the show is rotoscopers.com/Amazon. Use that to start all of your Amazon shopping, and it helps to support the show. Very, very easy way if you're shopping on Amazon anyway. Just, have that link saved and use that. And we really do appreciate anyone who uses the link when they're just doing their shopping. And another way to support the show is the Rotoscopers store, rotoscopers.com/store. We actually did have an order this past week. Woo-hoo! So we are still shipping those out. And Patreon, rotoscopers.com/Patreon or slash patron. We are going to be recording another Rotocast this Saturday. And Mason, kind of a perk of the Rotocast is that while we were doing that, it's kind of a chill session. We have people asking questions. We're just kind of, it's just a lot more free form, a lot more intimate. We're just talking about our lives and different things. It goes all over the place. There's no real set agenda. You never know what to expect. However, one thing that kind of has become a tradition is that Mason will take requests from anyone who's joining us live for any sort of art or mashup or whatever. Draw Little Mermaid in the style of The Simpsons, right? So anything like that, he'll draw it, and then we'll send that art out to whoever, the patron that requested it. So if you want to get in on the action, go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon. And thanks to the patrons who support the show. We really, really, really appreciate it. Some people also did ask, how do they send voicemails? rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can call us on your phone at 406-646-6575. Please keep those brief and to the point, because we do get quite a few, so the more succinct calls will actually get preference in cases that there are multiple voicemails. And also, yeah, we'll try to mix it up if people are leaving, voicemail every single week and there's many. We'll try to mix in a variety of different callers. So just to mix it up. So if you're wondering, well, why didn't my voicemail get played? Just too many voicemails, which is a great problem to have. So
it is a great problem to have. Yep. the days of sending in 7-minute voicemails about how awesome Mason is and how
long over
how beautiful his hair is and how smart he is and how he's the preferred rotoscoper on the podcast.
Obviously.
Those days are done. You can't just do that anymore. You have to kind of mix up your content on the anyway.
Absolutely. I know.
We have had a few marriage proposals for Chelsea and Morgan. None of them have really panned out.
Still waiting. Yes. All right. Do you guys have any last thoughts before we go and say adieu?
Good on Pixar. This was another masterpiece. And congratulations to the whole crew. They have raised the bar yet again.
They have. Really excellent job, guys. The next episode that we have is Secret Life of Pets. So I'm excited to see where that one kind of goes. If anything, I'm kind of hoping that Secret Life of Pets is as much of a surprise as Finding Dory was for me. I've seen good things about it, but I'm also I don't know. So I'm hoping. I have high hopes for Secret Life of Pets.
All right, guys, until next episode,
We are the Rotoscopers. Just because I want to throw this in there, Bill Hader's character was one of my absolute favorite, throwaway characters.
Really?
As far as a throwaway character, he was just
he's kind of a jerk.
I know, but the duo between he and the wife.
Him and the wife were very well animated.
You are not helping.
I like Where's Maya Rudolph? Fearless Astrid Hofferson is saying we should name it Finding Mason, and I agree because... I mean, look at me. Wouldn't you want to find me?
Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. That's what you are.
That could be kind of entertaining.
Chelsea, are you frozen still? We don't like frozen Chelsea. Hello.
How do we know she's not just staying really still?
I'm going to kick her out.
Do it.
Speaking of frozen, 5-hour wait to go to the new Frozen ride.
I'm sure the Epcot workers from Norway love that their heritage has been smattered and replaced by Frozen.
Of course.
They're like, oh yeah, Norway is, you know, Norway's actually very fascinating. Yeah, get us in the Frozen ride. No. We haven't relied on foreign energy in over 50 years. Show us Olaf.